This is Trump Watch. I'm John Wiener, live in LA on 90.7 KPFK, talking about what Trump is actually doing, not just what he's tweeting. Later in this hour, your Minnesota moment, my chat with Al Franken. We'll be talking about the new number one best-selling book. It's titled Al Franken, Giant of the Senate, and the author is Al Franken. First up, John Nichols. We'll ask him if anything happened in Washington today. Trump Watch starts right now. Now it's time for our Washington Report with John Nichols. Of course, he's national affairs correspondent for The Nation and a regular guest here on Trump Watch. His new book, coming out next month, is Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, a field guide to the most dangerous people in America. We reached him today in Madison. John, welcome back.
John Wiener, it is great to be with you.
Well, let's start with Jeff Sessions. First of all, I guess he's still Attorney General at this hour, but I wonder if Jeff Sessions is one of the horsemen of the Trumpocalypse featured in your forthcoming book on the most dangerous people in America.
He is indeed. So, you know, you can understand that I'm sort of rooting for the guy to stick around until
the end of August.
You know, truthfully, the profile of Jeff Sessions is so devastating that even if he does have to stand down as Attorney General, it must be told. Because I think I've told you before, it opens with the line, what can you say about Jefferson and Beauregard Sessions III that hasn't already been said by David Duke?
That's pretty good.
I know, it's... Because in researching it, I know we're talking about all this other stuff, Russia and, you know, all the Trump horrors and stuff like that. But in researching it, one of the most fascinating and horrible things I've ever had to do was to go kind of like into the right-wing social media world.
Mm.
And I mean really right-wing, like neo-Nazis and actual Nazis and Klansmen and stuff like that. And you want to know the one irony of that space on the web?
Yeah.
They have three heroes. They have, you know, since last year, they've had three absolute heroes. Number one, Michael Flynn.
Okay.
Right, General Flynn. Okay. Number two, Steve Bannon.
Okay. Right?
But above all, to the point where, like, they actually put, like, portrait-style photos of him on their websites, Jeff Sessions. They love Jeff Sessions.
Wow. And what makes Jeff Sessions so wonderful in their eyes?
I think that they're of the view, not necessarily shared by the United States Senate, or at least by a majority in the United States Senate, that Jeff Sessions hasn't actually abandoned his past.
Ah.
And his past, as you will recall, was, in the polite parlance of our media, racially insensitive.
Thank you for being so gentle.
In the reality, horrific. I mean, the guy tried to put voting rights activists in jail.
Yeah, I think he's the first attorney general in American history to try to do that.
Well, in fairness, there were probably some other Southern segregationist Democrats along the way. But the thing about Sessions was he was doing it in 1986. He wasn't doing it in, like, the 40s.
Yeah.
And... so, but it's just, in writing about him, what comes through is that, you know, this guy's got horrible, horrible views, on a host of issues. Not just on race, which is more than enough, but also on gender, on sexuality, on the drug war. I mean, I thought everybody was against the drug war, right?
Mm.
Except for Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. The weirdest part of yesterday, when Donald Trump was talking to the New York Times and, you know, kind of trashing on Jeff Sessions, was, you know, to actually sort of agree with Donald Trump that Jeff Sessions is a really bad guy, but still kind of like shocked and horrified that Donald Trump had found the one responsible thing that Jeff Sessions ever did and got mad about it.
So you don't agree with Donald Trump that it was very unfair to the president for Jeff Sessions to recuse himself from the investigation of the campaign of which he was had been a part?
Well, you see, the problem with Trump's blame laying, right? And you know, I love Trump likes to believe that everybody else is responsible for his problems, right?
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that Jeff Sessions had already lied to the Senate about the issue and thought he got away with it, right?
Yeah. You
know? So it's not really fair to Jeff Sessions. He thought he was getting away with his lies and deceits. He didn't know he was going to get caught. And I think Trump should understand that explanation.
Appreciate it. You're so right.
You know, in fairness to Trump. And by the way, you know, this does intersect with your next interview.
It does, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I mean,
Franken who brought this stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, we give Al Franken credit for his, you know, prosecutorial brilliance in getting Jeff Sessions to lie on the stand, which then forced him to recuse himself, which led eventually to the appointment of a special prosecutor. But actually, as Al Franken explains in this interview that we taped last week, what he asked Jeff Sessions was, "Would you recuse yourself if this investigation proceeded?" And then Jeff Sessions didn't answer that question. Instead, he said, "I never met with the Russians," which was completely from left field at that point. And we all sort of scratched our head and said, "Well, that wasn't what he was asked about." So Al Franken does not get the credit for his prosecutorial brilliance.
Yes, he does, because he's so smart. He doesn't even have to think it through. He just nails him by, you know, like sort of, you know, throwing stuff at the wall.
Yeah.
No, the fact of the matter is, in fairness to Franken, he's too modest. His question was one that was developed on the fly as information was coming out, I believe, from the Washington Post about potential meetings.
Yes.
And so Franken turned it around very quickly, asked a relatively broad question. The evidence seems to be that Sessions was so fully aware of his problems, right, that the second you even mention this stuff, he starts denying.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than you know, giving a what he could have done, which is just a legalistic answer. And it's notable that he also lied when questioned by Patrick Leahy in paperwork for it. So, I mean, look, Sessions is a mess. He should be impeached and removed from his position. That is why the impeachment power exists. It's not just for presidents and vice presidents. It's for, you know, all the executive branch appointees. And when you lie repeatedly to the United States Senate, and then when you recuse yourself, but then head over to the White House to help them plot how to fire the guy who's running the investigation you recused yourself from being involved with?
Yeah.
That, my friend, is the point where even Republicans should accept the necessity of his removal.
Yes, I see what you mean there. Yes, indeed. Well, I have a pet peeve about Jeff Sessions. It's not about his racist past. It's not about his lying about contacts with the Russians. It's not about his participation after recusing himself in firing the head of the FBI. It's about today's news that yesterday he restored that practice called civil asset forfeiture. This is a pet peeve of mine in federal criminal proceedings. This is the practice.
You've lost a lot of property this way. Right?
This is the practice where the feds or the local police can seize your car or even your house or your TV if they argue they were purchased with ill-gotten gains from the drug trade. And the thing is, they don't have to convict you of a crime. They don't even have to charge you with a crime to seize your property. Even if you are never charged with a crime, they can still take your stuff. The Obama Justice Department under Eric Holder had abolished this outrageous practice, and the ACLU and other groups have been fighting it for years and had made some progress. Let me just tell you a story. I have a friend who gave his brother-in-law in Tennessee a beautiful new big screen TV set for Christmas. And the guy was a pot smoker, and the police knew he was a pot smoker, and they came to his house and found some pot there, and they saw he had this beautiful TV. And they took his TV and said, well, you know, we think maybe you got this TV by selling pot to other people, and so you have to forfeit this under civil asset forfeiture. He got a lawyer. The lawyer made a plea deal where they would drop the possession charges if they got to keep the TV. And so right now the cops are watching his big, beautiful new TV, and that's civil asset forfeiture, and Jeff Sessions just restored it for federal prosecutors. That's my pet peeve for today.
That is really a well-done presentation.
Thank you.
Highest marks to you.
I've been waiting for months to have a chance to talk about this.
Well, can I just assure you, Jen, that every horrible anecdote that you have about abuses of law enforcement, as long as Jeff Sessions stays as Attorney General, there's a really good chance you're going to be able to put it to use. the guy is literally, I mean, in addition to all the horrible stuff he's doing on voting rights and on policing and a host of other issues that, you know, go beyond, you know, some of what you're talking about here and are in other areas, when you go into the core law enforcement issues, you see that this guy is clearly trying to reverse the progress that we have made in dialing down the drug war. He seems to have no interest in addressing, you know, the absolutely out of control mass incarceration in this country. His disregard for and disrespect for the science that tells us that there is tremendous racial inequity in our police systems and in our criminal justice systems, or policing and criminal justice. And disregard for that is so unsettling and so, frankly, out of sync with the times.
Yeah.
He is at odds not merely with liberal radio talk show hosts whose friends have given away TVs. He is also at odds with it, you know, where what was or what looked to be the arc of progress on the libertarian and even mainstream conservative side of a lot of the debate.
Yeah. Well, there's some of my friends have one concern about Jeff Sessions resigning, and that is that it will. Right now, we have this stable situation with the Russia investigations. Jeff Sessions has recused himself. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is acting as the head of the FBI for the purposes of the special counsel, Robert Mueller, who has assembled apparently an excellent team investigating the Trump campaign's collusion with Russia. We're now in a stable situation on this, and that's why Trump is so agitated about it. If Jeff Sessions resigned or if he was fired, this whole situation could be upended, and we could end up with a new attorney general firing Rod Rosenstein and the new deputy firing Robert Mueller. So from the viewpoint of keeping the Russia investigation of Robert Mueller going, maybe it's better to leave the status quo in place. What do you say to my friends who make that argument?
Whoa, John, my head hurts.
Okay.
That was like the most complicated thing I ever heard.
All right.
Right there.
All right.
Yeah, that's like healthcare policy. Okay, here's the problem. I absolutely share the view. And I think that, yes, keeping Mueller on the game, keeping the inquiry going is very, very important. That could absolutely continue to be the case if you just put a new attorney general in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it could be.
It's not guaranteed, but it could well be. And those theoretically, and I think logically, would be a part of any approval process.
Mm-hmm.
Or a new attorney general. And so while I respect the concerns, and they're legit because we're dealing with some pretty wild people here. While I respect the concerns, here's what I would say. You have an attorney general of the United States right now who's reversing 50 years of, you know, Justice Department policy as regards voting rights issues and where the department lines up on voting rights cases. It seems to have little or no concern in this area for, you know, democracy itself. A guy who is reversing the progress we've made on down the drug war, who doesn't seem to have an even minimally appropriate concern about mass incarceration or the incredibly important criminal justice issues that are in play in this country at this point. I'm not sure that keeping Jeff Sessions in position to keep that the whole of that structure you just described, which I think we can maintain anyway, is an excuse for keeping him. Okay. I hope I've said it
good.
In a slightly less complicated form than you have.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I feel better already.
So we've only horrible attorney general.
We've only got a couple minutes left here, and you know our friends are always telling us we can't just talk about Russia. There's the things that actually matter to real people in America, like health care. Just in the next 3 or 4 minutes, what's going to happen now that the Republicans have failed to repeal or replace Obamacare? Where do we go next, and what should our program be for the November 2018 midterm elections?
Well, our first program should be the continued defense of the healthcare system, as it in its flawed and dysfunctional form. Not because we like where it's at. We want single payer Medicare for all healthcare. That's what we want. That's what we should be heading towards. But we shouldn't make things dramatically worse for people who are currently relying on what's there. And so, do not get soft at this point. We've beaten them on horribly constructed plans from Mitch McConnell, but there's still the budget process to go forward, as well as debates about tax policy. Those will intersect with healthcare, and so the dangers are not averted in the short term. In the long term, I do believe that Donald Trump's appearance where he was cheerleading for the unimaginably horrible Ryan bill, as well as the support that many of these senators gave for the unimaginably horrible McConnell proposal, that's going to be a factor in 2018. But you know what will be the biggest factor of all?
What?
Will be next week, if McConnell brings repeal to a vote, because did you see the CBO scoring, or at least the analysis today on what would happen if you repeal Obamacare?
Tell us.
It's devastating. Every analysis, you know, all these CBO scores for the previous bills and all these assessments for the previous bills, you know, were saying, you know, this change would do this much damage because even though it tried to keep some of what you've got, you know, you would lose other things. And so you get tens of millions of people. Well, repeal costs more people their health care if the analyses that we're seeing, you know, at this point. Repeal in itself is actually more devastating than the replace bills. And so if McConnell brings this to a vote on, you know, someday next week and forces his caucus members to vote for repeal, which we'll probably lose because some Republicans will break, but if he forces, they're on the record for taking away health care from tens of millions of people. I that's a pretty good issue.
That's a pretty good... I'm
trying to reduce it to crass politics, mind you, but my sense is, you know, you can vote for this woman or that guy. This woman wants to make sure you have health care. That guy voted to take health care away from tens of millions of people.
That is a pretty good issue. John Nichols of The Nation magazine, his new book coming out next month is Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, A Field Guide to the Most Dangerous People in America. John, it's always great to have you on the show.
Total pleasure today, my friend.
I'm John Wiener, live in L.A. on 90.7 KPFK with Trump Watch and TrumpWatchPodcast.com. Next up, Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. That's in a minute on KPFK when Trump Watch continues. It's the same old story. I'm John Wiener. This is Trump Watch on KPFK 90.7. It is the fun drive today on KPFK, and we are excited to be featuring Al Franken's new book. The title is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. It's a book about Al Franken, and the author is Al Franken. I spoke with Al Franken when he was in town last weekend. Al Franken, we talked in 2003 about your book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. It was a number one bestseller. In that interview, you were really funny. You were hilarious. But then around 2008, you just stopped being funny. What happened? Was it problems at home or what went wrong?
When I really stopped being funny was during the recount. That's when I completely lost my sense of humor. No, I was running for office, and I had thought that comedy would be an asset. My career would have been an asset, but the Republicans right away just started putting everything I'd ever written or said through this $15 million machine called the Dehumorizer. And it had been built with advanced Israeli technology to take all the irony and context that any hyperbole and just suck it out and leave you with something offensive. And so I learned that it became very clear very early in that race that humor wasn't going to be the thing that you can't litigate comedy. And so I had to sort of say, okay, this is why I'm running, and let people know that I was serious about serving in the Senate and serving the people of Minnesota. And it worked, barely, but it worked. Norm Coleman, opponent, had been mayor of St. Paul and had run for governor and had lost to Jesse Ventura. So he's lost now to a professional wrestler and a comedian.
And Norm Coleman, how's he doing these days?
Yeah, people worry about him. Some people, I beat him, and people worry, but he's landed on his feet. He now continues to serve the people of Minnesota as a paid lobbyist for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Norm Coleman, I have a pet peeve about Norm Coleman because he started out as a anti-war student radical in the Vietnam era.
Yeah, he was SDS. Yeah.
Then he became a Democrat, a DFLer.
Right, and he was mayor of St. Paul as a DFLer, and then he switched in the middle and became Republican, and people changed their views. People should be able to do that, and I'm not sure if it was because there was no road to higher office as a DFLer at that point or not, but he became Republican, and he did lose in a three-way race to Jesse Ventura, and so he's lost to a comedian and a professional wrestler, and I'm hoping that he runs one more time and loses to a human cannonball.
Okay. Well, I got the impression from your book that you don't like Ted Cruz very much.
Well, I use in the book I talk about how much I do work with my Republican colleagues and how much I do like a number of them, but Ted is, I write a chapter on Ted because he's kind of the exception to the rule, which is that the rule is that to get things done in the Senate, you have to be collegial, and Ted's kind of a toxic coworker. He's kind of the guy who microwaves fish in the lunchroom. So I do write a chapter about him, and it's completely fair. I say at the beginning, as one thing you should know about Ted Cruz is that I like Ted Cruz probably more than most of my colleagues like Ted Cruz, and I hate Ted Cruz, and then I explain why.
What do you think about a political party whose final two candidates for the nomination are Ted Cruz and Donald Trump?
It is interesting that they were the two finals standing, sort of. I mean, Kasich was in there too, but he didn't have a chance, and there's no doubt that Ted was second. And the fact that the establishment Republicans didn't get behind Ted says a lot about who he is as a person.
As I recall, there was only one senator who got behind Donald Trump.
Sessions did. Sessions did early, and he's attorney general now. And we had one who got behind Ted Cruz, which was Mike Lee. Mm-hmm. And so neither of them were terribly popular. And I think the Trump voters liked that they weren't popular with establishment Republicans. I think Trump voters are mad both at they're just mad at government, big government, and just think basically there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats. There's huge differences, but they didn't. And they looked at big government as a self-serving entity that has no interest in their lives. And, you know, I understand how they feel that. I think they're wrong. But there are aspects of the way things work in Washington that they're right about. And very often it can be that these big corporate interests, capture regulatory agencies. And so that's why the Bernie people and the Trump people, very often people voted for Bernie in the primaries, voted for Trump.
Very often?
I think so, or somewhat often. I do think so. And
Bernie,
there are a lot of people who voted for me in 2014 in Minnesota and voted for Trump in 2016.
Yeah, I want to talk about this because Bernie won the DFL caucus quite a bit. What did he get? He got 62%. You were not a Bernie supporter. Let's talk a little bit more about the Bernie supporters in Minnesota during the primary.
Well, there wasn't a primary.
The caucus.
Well, there's a big difference. There's no perfect way to do all of this. There just isn't. But I think that the primaries make sense after the Iowa caucus. I think then the rest of the system should be primaries. There's a reason to have a caucus, which is that, you know, if you just have primaries, if you just have a primary at the beginning, whoever has the most money can get on the air. But the Iowa caucus is you get the people, everybody in Iowa who cares about this expects to meet all the the candidates at least, you know, and candidates should come in and fold your laundry and stuff like that so that you get to know them.
You are a trained lie spotter.
I am. I am. That's what I – was part of what I do. And I kind of – it was self-taught.
Would it be fair to call Jeff Sessions a lying little weasel?
I think that would be I don't think I would say that.
If you Google Jeff Sessions and lying little weasel, you get 30 million results.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that's not how I would characterize the Attorney General of the United States. I do think that he answered one of my questions by not answering it, and said, since I asked him if it turned out that members of the Trump campaign had continuous communications with Russians during the campaign, what would he do? Meaning, would he recuse himself? And he said, I had no connections or communications with the Russians
during the campaign,
and he did.
And he did. And this is a lie. It's a lie under oath. Lying under oath to Congress, this is a crime. People have gone to jail for lying under oath to Congress.
Yeah, and I would like him, his written responses to why he answered the way he did were not at all satisfactory. And his opening statement at the Senate Intelligence Committee's hearing where he testified was very unsatisfactory to me. I want him to come before the committee again, and he is the head of the Justice Department. We're the Judiciary Committee. We have oversight over the Justice Department. He should be appearing before us, and I will. You know, there sometimes people give false testimony for a reason other than that they're lying. And so that's what, you know, I have not been satisfied with his – I think his answers about why he answered the way he did and his characterization of it have also been inaccurate and false. So he's in a deep hole as far as I'm concerned.
And the result of your questioning of Jeff Sessions was that we got Robert Mueller, special counsel, investigating many things. And we want to give you credit for the prosecutorial brilliance of your questioning here.
Well, again, it's weird because I asked – he answered a question I didn't ask, but a lot of people kind of give me credit for like that Franken. He's clearly playing three-dimensional chess and is four moves ahead of everybody else. That was brilliant. And that wasn't really I didn't try to trap him. It wasn't a gotcha question. It was simply, would you recuse yourself if it turns out? And instead of answering that question, he said, I didn't meet with the Russians. And when it turned out he did, about 7 weeks later in the Washington Post, and the fact that he didn't correct that in the 7 weeks was damning, and that's when he recused himself. So, you know, and then when he recused himself, Rosenstein became the effective head of that, and they fired Comey, and because Comey was fired, they got a special prosecutor. And so... You're welcome.
Okay. What you started in Lies and the Lying Liars was you had a team of researchers check the claims made by Fox News, by people like Bill O'Reilly, and show that they were wrong. This has now become a full-time industry of the mainstream media. The New York Times ran that whole page showing that Trump had lied every day. But as a trained lie spotter, you would die of overwork if you devoted those talents to all the lies Donald Trump tells. What do you make of Trump's lying and of the fact that his supporters don't seem to mind it when people like you show that these are lies?
Yeah, well, I don't really bother too much with that anymore. I mean, I think it's kind of adorable that I made a living pointing out that people were lying about right-wing lies. You're right. It doesn't matter anymore. And I think that, people in the United States now have self-sorted and kind of live in communities where people think like they do. And they get their information. I mean, Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations is about talk radio to a great degree. And Lies and Lying Liars, You Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right was about Fox. And it was about other Republicans who lie. People get their information from the sources that confirm their own bias. And so a lot of people just... Either they, you know, a lot of his supporters would say, like, don't take what he says literally. You just got to understand what he's basically saying and take him seriously. Mm-hmm. So there was that excuse about lying. But I think there's also other people who literally buy this fake news thing, which is ironic because the fake news first became a term because of what the Russians essentially were doing. This is feeding this fake news after they had hacked us and weaving these fake narratives, the pizza parlor where John Podesta and Hillary Clinton had a pedophile ring. So I do think that a lot of people get their information from places that they choose to get their information from. So it's a much, much harder to break through to correct things that are false these days.
Some of my friends think even if everything we suspect about the Trump campaign's collusion with Russians, that all that is true, that it's still a mistake for the Democrats to focus on this. What the Democrats need to focus on, the argument goes, is the real reasons they lost the election and what it's going to take to win back those white working class men in, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and a lot of them in Minnesota. And the Democrats should be talking about a big infrastructure program, about health care for all, about free college, and not focus so much on Russian hacking. What do you think about that argument?
I think you can chew gum and walk at the same time. And I actually do agree that the intelligence committees in both the House and the Senate should be focused on what happened in terms of the Russian hacking and working on and what we can do to prevent it from happening again. I think that – and we have Robert Mueller, who I think is the right guy, as a special prosecutor. And let him go – he'll go where the facts take him. And so we have that in place, I guess, thanks to me. So so I agree with that. We should be really speaking to those people who have, you know, I think – legitimate beefs with life for the last 40 years, the squeeze on the middle class, the corporate, you know, capture of the courts. The Trump election didn't help on any of these scores. Yeah. You saw that, you know, the people going to be most hurt by the Senate health care bill and the House health care bill would be people in the very people who voted for Trump, or a lot of those people. Mm-hmm. But they have reasons to distrust the government, and I think we have to pay attention to that. You know, they think that big government is self-serving, and that's not untrue in many ways. And Sheldon Whitehouse has written a great book called Captured, and it basically talks about, you know, how they – Citizens United means that they've captured a campaign finance and our election system, and they appoint justices who allow that and who make it impossible for people to get into a courtroom because of mandatory arbitration. Mm-hmm. And that they capture regulatory agencies, and because of the revolving door where you go from regulatory agency into a private company and get paid big bucks. And the idea that people distrust in Trump country, distrust big government, the idea that, like, to scoff at that is just wrong. And that's, I think, why there was overlap between Bernie and Trump, and why there are people who voted for me and who voted for Trump. So, I agree with you. And I think one of the things we have to do is go to those people and listen. I think listening is a good idea for a politician.
Of course, we're all preoccupied with the health care bill, what's going to happen in the Senate, what's going to happen in the country. Do you think it's time? Do you think we're moving towards a single-payer system or something like Medicare for All?
You know, I talked about health care. I have a chapter on health care, and I talked about what the approach was in 2009. And there were some of us who were for single-payer, and Bernie was leading that. But I mentioned that you had to get 60 votes, and we were about 50 votes short. And so what we were trying to do is – my opponent, Norm Coleman, at the time would say, we have the best healthcare system in the world, in the United States. And the proof of it is we have the Mayo Clinic here in Minnesota. And I point out the Mayo Clinic isn't a healthcare system. It's a hospital and clinic. And T.R. Reid wrote a book on all the healthcare systems in the world, and basically said, we in the United States, we don't have a healthcare system. We have lots of systems. If you're in Medicare, you're in the Canadian system. If you're, in the military, if you're in the VA, you're in the British system. You're in socialized medicine. If you are getting through your employer, you're in the German system that Bismarck started. If you don't have insurance, you're in the Cambodian system. And what ACA tried to do is get people in the Cambodian system into one of the others, either in the Canadian or into the German system, and succeeded to a great extent in doing that. What we need to do, I'm hoping this bill goes down. I've been doing everything I can to fight the Senate bill and the House bill. Minnesotans in rural Minnesota don't like this bill. 17% of Americans support this Senate bill. That's the exact number of Americans who have said they have seen a ghost. And they don't like it for a reason, which is that this is taking health care away from people who need it. People on Medicaid generally are working people. There's some people who are disabled. There are people who are in nursing homes. More than about 60-some percent, 64%, I think, of people in nursing homes have it paid for by Medicaid. Half the births are paid in the country, Medicaid. And these rural hospitals really, really have benefited from the expansion of Medicaid and would be terribly hurt by all the uncompensated care that would happen come from all these people who would become uninsured because of this bill and would go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
And you'd see these hospitals have to either lay off a lot of people. Very often they're the largest employer in a county.
Mm-hmm.
Would have a terrible economic impact on the county, and sometimes they would close because of this. So So hopefully we will, if this doesn't go through, I hope that we can work in regular order, go through the committee process to shore up the exchanges. I would love a public option.
You would love a public option.
Yeah, I was for a public option. Again, we needed 60 votes, and you know we were short on that. We had a few Democrats. I mean, Harry Reid had 60, mm-hmm. so everyone had a veto, unfortunately.
Yeah.
At one point, we were going to lower Medicare to 55, and that would have been very good. And Joe Lieberman kind of squashed that because you needed every member of the caucus. So I hope we do a bipartisan effort to fix the things that are not working right now in our healthcare system. And that means the exchanges, also pharmaceutical costs, which I have a very comprehensive bill to address.
Last question. You're extremely successful as a book author. I found a webpage that shows you have sold more books than anyone in the Senate.
I mean, look, there are good books from senators, but by and large, the political memoir is not the most exciting genre that publishing has produced.
Only a few people in politics have sold more books than you. I just want to mention a couple of them. The Audacity of Hope, number one bestseller, mm-hmm. author went on to become president.
Sure.
Art of the Deal, huge number one bestseller, author went on to become president.
And Tony Schwartz is president?
Very good. Al Franken, giant of the Senate, number one bestseller. You see where I'm going with this.
Yeah, this is 2020. I've been very flattered in this book tour. People have been saying, I think who's ever president should really, really, really want to be president. I've seen the presidency closer up as a senator than I thought I would see when I was a comedian. And it's an incredibly difficult job. Tremendous pressure, and people say, "Well, you'd be better than Donald Trump," and I go, "Well, yeah, but that's no reason that someone should be president." And they like the book, or they like what I've been doing in the Senate, and it's very, very flattering. But certainly, I'm not considering that.
The book is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. The author is Al Franken. Senator Franken, thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, this has been a great pleasure.
Well, that's it for today's Trump Watch. I want to thank my other guest, John Nichols of The Nation magazine, and thanks to our engineer, D'Angelo Jones, our producer, Renee Reynolds. Thanks, as always, to Rye Cooter for our theme music, Mambo Sinuendo. Coming up at 4 tonight on KPFK in 1 minute, this is happening. Jerry Quickly. And Trump Watch returns next week at the same time on the same station, where the number is 818-985-5735.